Thank you, Chair. We do have in the delegation or team of Electricity Distribution Industry Holding Company. It's a name based on our office, Malta, in the Western Cape. So obviously would be more contactable, I think, even for those who will need more information even after the meeting, Chair. He's quite close to Parliament from members or any other person, Salim Mausa. We do have as well our CEO, Pindi Nzimande. She will actually be taking us through the details and obviously would actually be clarifying questions. And obviously, even after the meeting, some of the any follow ups, we'll be able to actually do that. I am Duma Nkosi, chairperson of the EDI Holding Company. Thank you, Chair. We will actually hand over to the CEO to take us through the presentation. Well, from the Department of Energy, DDG Makuvela. Okay. So, well, we want him, definitely, as you can see. We're sitting at the same corner. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will be referring to the slide numbers inside the boxes. We have about two slides a page. We have numbered the pages. I'll refer to the slides themselves. The presentation outline just indicates what we would like to brief the committee on. The first component deals with just who EDI Holdings is, corporate focus. Second component covers the business strategy and the restructuring matter. And then lastly, we just indicate what the plans for the future are. Moving on to the next page, just to say who we are as EDI Holdings, 100% state-owned company established in 2003 to restructure the electricity distribution industry. One of the deliverables of the blueprints on EDI restructuring that Cabinet adopted in 2001. We report to the Ministry of Energy now, so DME in the past. Our head office is in the corner, and we do have some regional representation, as the chair has indicated later. Nelson Mandela, East London, it has been as well as
Madam Chair, can I just interrupt if you don't mind? If I'm correct, this is exactly the same document we had at Gordon's Bay. And I don't see the need of us really going through the whole thing again. And I'm not proposed that if there's any add-ons or questions as we're handling, because we're doing a duplication of something we've done 3 weeks ago. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Do you want to
Chairperson, perhaps we can do it in this way. To the extent that the material was covered at Gordon's Bay, we're happy to skip. But in the restructuring focus, we have double-clicked one level of detail below, partly to deal with some of the questions that were raised at Gordon's Bay. So perhaps one could jump straight to the restructuring focus and cover those particular areas that are now different in the presentation. That's acceptable to the committee.
I think they can go through the
Okay. Thank you, Chair. I then have moved quite a bit into the document that's been handed out. We do remind the committee what the policy of government is on electricity and what challenges face the distribution industry. And one will not go over that ground. Towards the end, though, I'd still like to emphasize on issues of infrastructure. Moving to slide 35, which is about halfway through the pack, that's the slide deck that's been circulated. We indicate that there are two key programs to address the EDI challenges identified by government. The first one is the EDI restructure program, and the second one is the rescue plan for the infrastructure that's not doing too well. On slide 37, we just show again the boundaries of the risk overlaid over the boundaries of the country, particularly the provincial boundaries, indicating where the six risks are and how they're demarcated. And again, just to point out that demarcation was done based on a certain criteria, but that was agreed by stakeholders. What we then do in this presentation that we didn't do at Gordon Bay is just to try and describe the reds a little bit more tightly and a little bit more clearer. And on slide 38, we say what are the reds. The reds will be new companies into which both municipalities and Eskom will transfer their electricity distribution businesses, that the shareholding ownership of these companies will be split between Eskom, national government, and local government. And the REDS will be service providers for electricity, where municipalities will remain service authorities. The REDS will collect the surtax in accordance with that Act, the Municipal Fiscal Powers and Functions Act, on behalf of municipalities and pass it on. That the REDS would also pay dividends to the shareholders, but that will be subject to financial performance, as is normally the case. And that the relationship between the REDS and municipalities would be governed through an agreement called the Service Delivery Agreement that is prescribed in local government legislation, the Systems Act, an act passed in 2000. These rates, again, would also be regulated by the national energy regulator in the country, and we believe that eventually you'd have better role clarity in the different role players' roles going forward. That's now at the governance level. If one looks at the operations of the REDS, the business model, how would they run the business. For one, even though the REDS are as expansive and as big as they are, would ensure that they have a decentralized geographical service delivery system, so would keep the technical service centers or the depots, as well as customer contact centers, throughout the geography of each entity. And the REDS would be obliged to enable the government's social policy of both electrification and free basic electricity. And because there'll be a single institution focusing on the service of electricity, you'd find that you get consistent in operating policies and application across the REDS geographical areas. And there's a better sense of development and application of best practices, because you'll be able to then benchmark amongst the entities themselves. We'd also make sure that in general, the REDS support government objectives, both of social as well as economic development. In particular, they will highlight the universal access by 2012 and 2014 for other types of housing. We believe that the REDS would be more efficient and be better able to serve customers. What we did was we have developed a preliminary business case, and in this business case, we looked at just three pillars of opportunities. There obviously are a lot more. We just thought that if we talk to three of the pillars of opportunities, that the business case is sound. The one pillar relates to interest charges or interest rates, cost of capital. We believe that once you've created the rates in the size that we propose, they would definitely enjoy a lower interest rate or lower interest charges compared to current operators. And then thereby they would get improved access to capital markets. Secondly, that there are a number of efficiencies to be had in non-payroll related areas. Generally, when companies talk about efficiencies, the first thing they go for is staff. And in this instance, we challenge ourselves to assume that staff stays as it is, but try and find efficiencies in other parts of the business. And we, at conservative estimates, we do see a big opportunity there for efficiencies to be had. And the last pillar relates to accounts receivable. Generally, at the moment, current distributors and operators have different capabilities of collecting their the amounts due to them. Again, on assuming a slight improvement in the way the accounts receivables are being treated and collected, we see that the rationale for creating the rate is quite solid, and that the country should in fact proceed with the creation of these entities. Generally, within the distribution industry, you find that there are two discrete types of businesses sitting in one place. The one relates to, on the next slide, the one relates to the wires, the actual infrastructure, the electrical wires and cables, and switchgear and all the technology there. And then the second bit relates to the retail. So the wires are the area where you use the part of the system that you utilize basically to move the electricity. But the retail part is where customers apply, they get connected, they get issued accounts, and those types of things. So the types of businesses are slightly different in that in the one, you could be happily dealing with the wires and machines, and you need people who focus on those types of things. But in the retail side, you need people who are customer-driven, who are a little bit more sensitive to their customers, and who would make sure that their products and services are aligned to the different markets that they would be serving. And then the rest is again just how the rest of the operation. So you'd have a bundled business with both wires and retail, but then you'd have shared corporate services and make sure that at the beginning we buy in services from current operators so that we avoid standard costs and we avoid creating capability that's already in place. And again, we would make sure that depending on the geographical composition of the rate, the business model is adapted. So for areas with dense communities, you would make sure that the rate there looks slightly different from the one where there are long distances to travel for customers. And then what we also focus on in slide 41 is just to say that the municipal revenue stream, which has been one of the biggest concerns that has been raised about this particular process in relation to local government, we just thought that let's cover how the municipal revenue stream would be treated after the rate has been created. And as a matter of principle, we're saying that the municipalities will continue to derive income from electricity sales within their areas of jurisdiction. And for those that currently have the service, we will look at current audited revenue. But it will be easy to demarcate for the rest of the municipalities what the sales are in their area and calculate what surplus each municipality must earn and hand that over. Municipalities will receive current revenue from electricity through two streams. So the one is the surcharge, which I've just spoken to, and the second one is the dividend. And the dividend would really be reflecting growth in the economy, growth in the business, and those types of things. And that would definitely be subject to financial performance. So there are no conditions for the surcharge. It will come out at the top line, like a tax collected and passed on to the municipalities. But dividends would have to be subject to some discussion, and if the financial performance is not where it's supposed to be, shareholders might be asked to make some sacrifices in that regard. And again, we highlight the fact that the surcharges would be paid over to municipalities at a rate that wouldn't disrupt the cash flow to municipalities or that municipalities are used to from electricity. So again, we distinguish between dividends, which normally pay once a year, and the surcharge, which might have to be transferred at slightly more regular intervals than an annual transfer that would be the case in the instance of dividends. So that's overall a description of the end state, as the question was asked, of the vision of the new industry that we have. If then one comes back to the actual implementation towards the creation of rates, we as EDI Holdings have developed what we call the strategic implementation plan, together with its underlying roadmap. And with your permission, I'll just at a high level indicate what is contained in the strategic implementation plan. This plan has got four components. On the slide that we have up there, we just show that when cabinet took its decision about the RES, they did enjoin us, mandate us to go and develop an implementation roadmap so that everybody has a sense of how we're going to move from where we are into the future. The strategic implementation plan has got four components: national goals, impact assessment, transition charts, as well as reformulation. National goals: government has set itself goals, and the act lies in the steps that indicate what objectives national government has set itself for energy, electricity distribution in particular. We take those and we disaggregate them so that we get to a point where we're able to develop matrices and finally a scorecard. And it's basically to issues such as, when you say universal access by 2012, is it universal access to formal houses only? Is it universal access to every household, irrespective of its state of formalization relative to the north of the country? And those types of issues. And in general, just saying that we're creating a capacity for government to be able to say, this is what we set out to do, here's how we have performed, we've done well, or we haven't done too well. So that's the one component of the SRT. The second component, the impact assessment. Especially in the impact assessment, we look at the impact of restructuring on the various stakeholders that are key and indicate potential scenarios of impact. So we look at local government, we look at ESCOM, we look at national government, we look at customers. Customers fit according to different categories and those types of things. And we then say, if the transaction or if the deal is structured in this way, this would be the impact. If it is structured in another way, the impact would be something else. We then have a transition path component that just indicates the discrete stages through which you take the industry to be able to finally get to the destination. So almost like first step, second step, third step, fourth step. And the last component of the SIP relates to what we call the deal formulation. And in the deal, basically we're saying, what are the key parameters that parties have to agree on for them to feel that this transaction is worth their while, worth their investment, and then for them to proceed with it. We have identified a list of 23 issues based on input received from stakeholders and specific requests to stakeholders saying, tell us what is it that we need to resolve for you to move on this particular process. What we've then done is to formulate responses and proposals around some of these issues, and we will be taking those through a process of consultation and eventually negotiation amongst the stakeholders. And hopefully that some conclusions will be reached and we'll be able to move and get some conclusions. So even though the legislation will look different, negotiation will remain a very essential component of how we implement the rules. So I just thought one needed to focus on the issues in the deal, because often those are the issues that have been repeated again as issues that haven't been resolved and that possibly contributing to the hesitation of stakeholders to move. And on slides 46 and 47, we list the typical issues or the 23 issues that have been raised by stakeholders as issues to be resolved before they move. The issues range from protection of energy trading surpluses and surcharges that local governments would want assurances on, to issues such as credit rating, which would have been something that ESCOM would have wanted. So we've just listed the issues as they came out from the stakeholders, and through a process of ranking, we were able to identify what we call deal breakers. The top five issues that if they're not resolved, you're unlikely to get any movement on this issue. And those are issue one, protection of energy and trading surpluses, compensation for current asset owners, credit rating guarantees for those entities that have credit rating, transfer of assets and liabilities, because entities are worried that the assets will go and then remain with the obligation, and then the board governance and representation. Those would be some of the key issues that the stakeholders are worried about, and we're saying that the top five that will break us, if we don't resolve those, if we don't express an opinion around those, there would be serious challenges for our ability to move forward. Now, the issues are quite multiple. Each one of these issues has got its own dimensions. So what we've done is we've developed an issue management matrix that we plan to utilize to resolve these issues, and again utilizing a grading on the level of contentiousness of the issue on the one axis and the possibility of standardization on the other. We've then developed four categories, and we're saying that in other issues we'll mediate, in others there'll be one-on-one negotiation, others will be issues for policy solution and policy with a lowercase t, as I said, because it's not policy as in national government deciding to restructure, but smaller policy issues where you'd want to have the same treatment across the country so that there's some consistency, and then there are areas where we'll make recommendations. Now, if we just use as an example, we have populated or broken the issue into the various blocks or the various quartiles under issues that we think that should be resolved at a national level. Issues such as protection of surcharges, the compensation, the social development plan, through basic and access to electricity, service delivery agreements, those would be best treated and be uniform across the country. Again, issues such as key industrial customers, how those are treated. Currently, the bulk fit with Eskom, how are those going to be treated, and harmonization of conditions of service. So we have picked a set of issues, and said if we had a policy of standardized national solution to these, it would do the industry well for us to be able to do so. And if one makes another example on issues, say, for go to one-on-one negotiation, issues of standard assets. The different players have different capabilities currently, so others would be able to utilize the assets that remain to do other things. Others would say, no, we did it. We bought it specifically for electricity goals. Please help us deal with it. And those are the types of issues there. But you'd see issues on which would make a recommendation on the bottom right corner, which have capabilities. Generally, municipalities say to us, not only do we earn revenue from electricity, not only with our cash flow, but it's also our credit control leverage. We're able to switch electricity off and people will pay for all the other services that we provide as a municipality. So we're saying that on that issue very specifically, that leverage will be made available to local government. It will be utilized based on whatever is agreed between the entity and local government. And those are the types of issues. So we have developed this issue management matrix, and we'll utilize it to ensure that we drive the negotiations and get them to the point where they are concluded. As indicated, so that was just one component of the SIP that possibly thought it's quite important that we share with the committee and indicate that that work has been done. We have started preliminary consultations with stakeholders, and we will move into the next phase, which would be potentially some semi-formal negotiations. Just in terms of how much progress have we made then on this SIP, we have fairly finalized most of the components. The national goals and the matrices have been developed. Scorecard has been finalized, in fact. On the deal, we have finalized the preliminary transaction, and we have had preliminary consultations with both Eskom, Salga, and one or two municipalities just to test and their reaction, but we will be rolling out a formal process in that space. We have finalized some detail around the transition path, and the impact assessment is just about the only one that's outstanding, but the draft report is available and we'll be taking it through the processes. And the roadmap as well has been developed, and we should utilize that in going forward. Just in terms of some progress that we have made as EDI Holdings, again, I won't take you through that in detail. We did cover it at Gordon's Bay. But I just want to point out here that when we spoke to you in Gordon's Bay, we said 143 municipalities had signed that certain agreement, slightly cheaper. As of Friday, the 28th of August this year, we were sitting at 147. And our sense is that we should get the balance quite quickly. And just to explain what the accession agreement is, because this process is being run without enabling legislation, it was important that we got parties to sign a memorandum of understanding, essentially saying we will cooperate, we will restructure, we will take steps towards ensuring that we become ready for the restructuring program. And so it's quite important for us that it is signed by the various players. In some instances, though, people were able to move even without signing it, but those are fewer. Generally, we prefer that people sign. In terms of readiness, so each of the current operators need to do quite a number of activities to get ready to participate in the race. We have disaggregated the number of players, and we said there's a critical mass. And if we've got 12 municipalities, 12 ESCOM to participate, we've got 80% of the industry, and we can then roll out over a period the balance of the players. So ESCOM distribution is already ring-fenced from the rest of ESCOM, and it is operating on the 6 regions that we propose these are regions of the future. So they currently have 6 regions as ESCOM distribution and matching the future regions. And with regard to municipalities, we currently have 56 municipalities that are busy with their ring-fencing processes. So ring-fencing is identifying services, capacity, staff, systems that's related to electricity, and drawing a circle around it so that they know what belongs to electricity and what belongs to the rest of the municipality. When the electricity is moved, they move the electricity business. And it's quite important that they don't take things back that they're not able to fund because electricity is gone, but also not to throw everything they don't want into the process. So there's a methodology there that we've agreed with local government. And as indicated, we are funding the ring fencing exercise, and we are on site in 56 municipalities. And we have started receiving some of the reports, and we must say that the reaction of municipalities has been particularly interesting, because a whole lot of them are now understanding the business much better, and they now know things that they wouldn't have known unless they've gone through this particular process. We have also finalized some future design issues. I spoke to them much earlier. That's just some of the detail, and we can go through that. Again, as indicated, much as national government identified in 2001, perhaps even slightly earlier, that there were challenges with the distribution infrastructure, we were requested to run another exercise in 2008 to see how far has the situation improved in relation to the distribution infrastructure. And we established a project, we're calling it ADAM, Approach to Distribution Asset Management. And Madam Chair, we promise the next project will have a name from the other gender. and essentially in this project, what we've done is we've looked at the state of the infrastructure, we have looked at the projects that should be identified and put on the project plan by the various municipalities to ensure that they maintain the system in a reasonable state for it to continue to generate revenue for them. And we have found some interesting observations there. Generally, our conclusion is that the current state of the distribution infrastructure will not be able to contribute meaningfully to the critical power conservation program and the general challenges that the country faces. There's a severe infrastructure backlog that exists up to about 25 billion. And when we say backlog, we're talking to maintenance, refurbishment, and replacement, because where you don't maintain it, eventually you have to replace it. So it's in those three components. If you look at the maintenance figure alone, it's slightly lower. But we're saying that we need to be comprehensive in the way that we're assessing this situation. On slide 56, we show reports given by the regulator about the state of the infrastructure. They ran an independent technical audit, sent in engineers. The cities that we have on that list, plus the city of Joburg, which was the first one that was done. And they came back with a conclusion that just says basically there's generally average and below average performance by the various distributors in the country. As EDI Holdings, when we did our site visits in October, between June and October 2008, we discovered a few things that were disconcerting. One would be the fact that asset management strategies and plans generally don't exist. across the industry. There are one or two, three instances of excellence, but generally no asset registers, no asset management strategies. None of that exists. But generally, municipalities, even ESCOM, although ESCOM to a lesser extent are not providing adequately for investment, that the average age of electrical network is already exceeding 40 years. So whereas we generally have a long life, and if you maintain it properly, you can get double. If you're not maintaining it, at that point, the capacity and the propensity to break down is much higher. The regulatory environment as well, we find that license conditions are not being enforced as quickly as they could, and that there's a limited instance in which, or limited instances of cooperation just on the basis that we are neighbors, you know, we share a street as a boundary, we could do things collectively, we could procure collectively, we could strengthen each other. We're finding that that's not happening to the extent that it could happen. All of this compounded by the fact that the municipality's capacity to execute is limited by the staff they have, which generally fits with high vacancy rates, the technical services, up to 45%, and that then says that this picture is not looking too good. And in slide 50, we just show the numbers where we indicate how we calculated the backlog, and we do indicate that there's some routine maintenance that's happening because that must happen, but there's some maintenance that's not happening, and every year we don't maintain, we are accumulating or increasing the figure that is backlog, that has to be covered through the backlog. And we have the documents, and we are going through the processes with our sister department of saying how then do we execute, how then do we stem this bleeding within the industry. Lastly, I'd like to just cover issues relating to the legislative environment. As indicated earlier, this process of restructuring is happening outside of specific legislation that enhances and enables the program of restructuring, which would be the normal way to implement the government policy. One of the challenges that existed in this, in the implementation is that relating to legislation. So when the blueprint was developed in 2001 and solutions were proposed to the challenges faced by the distribution industry, that document envisaged the participation of all distributors in the country in order to ensure that national objectives are achieved. However, in terms of the current laws, electricity reticulation is a local government function allocated in Section 4B of the Constitution of the country. And after extensive analysis and consultation and various attempts to draft a red establishment law, the department was eventually mandated to go and look at dealing with the obstacles that the Constitution presents so that they're able to pass a piece of law that would be meaningful and that would have teeth. That's the 17th Constitution Amendment Bill was drafted after consultation with a number of stakeholders and presented to Cabinet. Cabinet approved it on the 15th of April, so published for comments from the middle of June to the middle of July, and then it has since been introduced into Parliament. The Bill 6.2 amends Section 156 of the Constitution. Section 156 of the Constitution is in Chapter 7 of the Constitution, which deals with local government matters and talks in general to how local government should execute its mandate the same way it would regulate national and provincial government. Now, the amendment seeks to add a further subsection to Section 156 that would enable national government through national legislation to further regulate how local government can execute on its executive authority, including dealing with issues of how then would assets be treated once national government has taken that type of decision. And then there are some protections that have been built in, such as that decision should be subject to ensuring that national objectives are met, regional efficiencies, economies of scale, and those types of issues. And it has been published. We didn't bring copies for the committee, but we had distributed them and gotten there, so we hope that they are available. Otherwise, we can send some to complement if we don't have them. And the red establishment legislation, therefore, remains under development, but would take its cue from what the shape of the constitution is like. So that would be finalized once the constitutional amendment process has gone through and the results there are then known by everybody. And so the colleagues from the department can talk about that. And in general, we're saying that as EBI Holdings, in conclusion, we would continue to like to work closely with the portfolio committee, particularly from the lawmaking capacity, but also just generally as leadership in this country to assist drive the program of restructuring. And we will continue to ensure that local government is ready, meeting and complying with its own laws, so that when the time to move is here, they can then move. We will also continue to develop and find solutions for stakeholder concerns on the basis of which negotiations can then be entered into and concluded. And continue to engage with stakeholders. And we currently host the Program Management Unit of the National Energy Response Team that was established in 2008 when the country went through that electric supply crisis. We not only host the unit, but we also participate in the working groups and the workings of the NEP. And we're saying that we remain committed to ensuring that the country has got proper capacity to respond to any challenges in the energy space, given all what we're going through. So, thank you very much.
Thank you for the further support. As this is a continuation from the economic workshop, and I'll give a detail now on how far we go in terms of implementation of the road. Can I open for questions or comments from the information to members? If you want any questions, or if you don't, that's the report you can then go on, Mr. Smith.
I've got a few questions. I don't know if you want me to put all of them in, or are we taking one by one? Can I put a few questions and then we can... Then the first one is that if I'm correct, on the 5th of August, the Minister of Public Regulation in the Government on the 5th of August, the Minister published a regulation in the Government Gazette that stated that she's now got the power to award tenders for IPP to buy the electricity from them. And if you remember from our meeting at Gordon's Bay, we also addressed the issue of IPPs and EDI holdings. And I would just like to have clarity on that. How they see the role of the IPP, especially now that it seems like, if you read that regulations correctly, private companies can also buy power now from independent power producers. And the whole issue of who's going to do it away from Eskom. The second question that I would like to put, I've played around a little bit on the website of EDI when I heard they're coming, and they actually state that one of their objectives is provide low-cost electricity for all consumers with equitable tariffs for each consumer segment. Now, we know the way that Eskom is currently going as far as tariffs is concerned, and also the meaning of low-cost energy for Minister Manuel and for Eskom and for the person in Kailicha means two or three totally different issues. I would just like to hear more about IDI's feeling on low-cost energy, what they are planning on that, and also what the relationship is to Eskom and NASA concerning the past price increases as well as the possible future ones. Thank you.
I thought
you
just made an example by yourself, just another sector of the future. Why is it
Manual, right? Mr. Manuel actually states our energy is by far too cheap, and he stated that in Parliament.
Yeah.
And that is why I'm using it.
Yes. Okay. That's good.
My question is basically to check from the CEO where would be the rest they allocated in terms of their physical structure. Will it be rest allocated in the municipal offices or they go to have their own offices somewhere else?
Thank you, Chairman. The first one is just a comment about red wine, which we were struggling so much that up to now that the red couldn't work. I'm just saying congratulations to you people who made them to understand what it's all about. Then, when I come to my question, is the question of municipalities. What will happen to the municipalities who are unable to manage the electricity distribution? And thank you. The CEO is saying 147 municipalities have signed the application. What about the rest? Are they having problems with EPI or what? Well, quite a lot of municipalities that they're not signed.
Okay. Just a quick one. I think it actually dovetails with the question already asked in terms of implementation. The deal breakers, and I think we've got five highlights there. These things could hold up the issue forever and a day. Look at that.
Okay.
The last one being the issue of on your slide relating to the security account receivable. Your target on best practices. How do you anticipate dealing with the issues of collecting revenue in this respect, especially as the different residential areas have different kinds of problems.
Well, the tide works. So I think maybe the first one would like to raise, Chair, that the company is having the principal department as the energy department. The processes that we engaged on now and the report we actually giving is the furthest we could actually be able to get to as the board of the company. So it means in the discussion and deliberation, without actually having to do the point on how the process between the company and the department is actually engaged. So the portfolio committee engagement, which we're actually having now, is at the point that as the board, we are actually comfortable with the details as part of the presentation. So that's one point I'd like to raise, Chairperson. But the next point which one would like to raise, just to say there is continuous engagement in terms of what the board proposes or suggests in terms of taking the process forward. Talking to the strategic implementation plan, there are lots of discussions between the company and the department, because process should be that the board of the company should be able to actually engage, agree, as in most of the presentation that we have done in terms of details. Then the department would then be able to take a view and a decision of saying, in terms of engagement of stakeholders, this detail will then be taken forward for the implementation. So I would actually agree with the committee chair that the board is comfortable and is hoping that the way that we have suggested in terms of proposals, having actually got the department to give support, we would actually, as soon as practically possible, be able to go out and engage stakeholders to make sure that the implementation gets better, because obviously, between the company and the department, it won't be us outside the stakeholders that we implement. Key stakeholders like municipalities are actually quite important to agree to process without actually over and above the issue of the accession agreement that we're looking at. So I would just say process-wise, we actually at where we are as our report, and we're hoping that the department should be able to actually endorse, give support. The real detail of engagement will be of all key stakeholders beyond government. But the government should actually be able, through the department and cabinet, to say we are on the right course, the detail is agreed to, and then we actually engage. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. If I just try and deal with the questions individually, and if I omit some things, we'll go back to them. And thanks the committee for all the questions. On the matter of IPPs, generally as a distributor, you would worry about security of supply. So, you know, exposure to a single generator would generally be concerning. So you'd appreciate the diversity of sources of power. So that's the first point that one would say. And secondly, to say that it is possible for IPPs to come in and for the current incumbent to allow them to wheel in electricity over their infrastructure and for them to be charged a certain amount. So as the rate, we would buy from IPPs if it made commercial sense to buy from IPPs. So in general, we would welcome the development and the arrival of IPPs, because then it gives you diversity and security of supply from that particular perspective. The processes of how we get there, I think that's one of the key challenges that we face as a country, and that's why the minister has been issuing these regulations, and I don't think this is the last. We will see quite a number, because we need a very clear and tight regulatory framework for IPPs to participate in this country and to make sure that the playing field is opened up and made fair, and that the incumbent monopoly doesn't dominate and kill the other players. So all of that is welcome from our perspective as a development. Provision of low-cost tariffs. That would have been a statement would have made a video holding based on the policy positions that the country has taken. And in the white paper of 1998, this country still committed itself to ensuring that it continues to produce and provide low-cost electricity to attract investors, but also to make sure that the community development. Again, we in that sentence, you would have read the members' notes that we talk about different customer segments, because yes, indeed, you would have to disaggregate amongst your customers. For one, the cost of supply to the different categories of customers is not similar. But even with the residential customers in particular, that's where the big differences would come in. So we would make sure that in the way we apply for tariffs as raised to the regulator, we take into account the fact that there are different capabilities amongst our communities, and in line with the social program of government, the free basic electricity and other programs, one would then seek to ensure that consumers pay for electricity, but they pay what is affordable. And in fact, in the goals that we've developed for national government, we do raise the issue of what does low-cost electricity mean. And we try and disaggregate it per customer category and say, here are some ideas around what that could mean. And you know, hopefully into the future, that's what we would be able to implement. Eskom's role is that they would be the wholesale supplier, and we are assuming that we would be able to take that cost, and the regulator who would regulate the rates and allow us tariffs would allow us to pass through what comes through on the supplier side. So I think the debate of low-cost electricity becomes a national debate, in the sense that if the generator of electricity generates electricity such that the prices are high, that's the best or the worst that the tariffs in the country can be. As EDI Holdings, what we're committing to is that the rates would not result in an increase that is out of line with the current trends that is experienced in the country. So overall, in our modeling, we've assumed tariffs as they stand, and increasing at the pace at which they have been increasing, depending on what the regulator has been able to allow. On the question of...
Maybe let me take that. Just a small addition, Chair. The point of maybe the independent power producer and the issue relating to low cost of energy, I was just thinking that there is an opportunity still to look at how, because coal will be depletable. We do for generation use coal. Alternative sources issue is a very big one, but I would say as well, investment on that, I'm not sure if ever you, when you have to do that, you will argue and debate cost being high, because it may be you investing for the new technology in terms of power production, so that we actually have a longer sustainable supply of energy. So you might find as well, Chair, that it may create an opportunity now to look at a longer-term alternative energy processes. You know, in terms of other sources of energy, coal being depletable, environmental issues related to that as well, becomes an opportunity to have a look at that issue. But you might find as well, assumption is, if you have more people contributing, it may affect the price to be lower. But generally, you may not have that as an outcome. It won't be more involved, price lower. It may be different. Like what I'm saying, if it includes new technology, for investment for that technology to develop and grow, there may be bigger inputs in terms of investment on that technology before you actually get to a point where there is a sustainable supply and acceptable prices related to that. So I'd like us to actually also look at that, because it's one of the same discussion. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. There was a question around where would REZ be accommodated. One of the key issues around the creation of REZ is tracing efficiencies. So we would seek efficient accommodation for the entities throughout. we have observed generally even now Ahidia Holdings, but in fact we tend to have buildings that are available that can be utilized, and to the extent that we can go into alliances with municipalities, one would look at it. But the guiding principle around where the rails would be located and where the operations would be located would be to ensure that they remain accessible to the communities that they serve. So one would look at spreading it in a way that would ensure that we are able to optimize on what currently exists, but also ensure equity in the way that people are able to access the rails. So if it's municipal depots that we have to use, we'll in fact, structures like those, you don't want to re-sell and reproduce. So one would possibly go with what exists. In other places, you might find that generally there was no presence, and you might have to look at investing afresh to make sure that there's a presence and there's a proximity to people. So those assessments would be made once the operations are being looked at closely. Nana Tvila, thank you very much around the issues of Red One. The plan generally with restructuring is to take current operations from all distributors. There's a view that says leave those that are working, deal with those that are battling. But as indicated, the premise of restructuring was that all current distributors must move along so that we are able to ensure the benefits that we have outlined. If we then reconfigure it and take some and leave others, you might not even be on the way of achieving the objectives that you've set out. So as EDI holders, we definitely caution against trying to disaggregate. Yes, the others that you must take first and others take later. But generally, we would like to be able to take over control of the distribution operations and put them into the rails and start standardizing some of the manners in which we operate these assets in the country for the benefit of the country and nothing else. And the question around when will these rails become operational? The member says that we've been talking for the last 5 years. In fact, the process started around 1991. So it's been coming a long way. Our sense, though, is that we're much closer to implementation than we've been. I think even the stakeholders are working much closer than they've ever been. That there's some traction that's beginning to develop in the implementation. And the absence of legislation, as indicated, has been one of those issues that has predisposed this process to not moving fast. When we established the pilot, the idea was to say to the country, is it possible to do it without new law? Can we use existing laws to implement? And I think the results of the pilot indicate no, you cannot. The existing legislation has got big gaps. And in fact, in the final analysis, the municipality pulled out because it had the constitutional authority to do so, and it did so, and they did say in so many ways, constitutionally, this is their service, and they don't need to participate in this process. And on the other side, ESCOM had its own issues. You know, whether ESCOM is a public entity currently, they're not prepared to put their assets into a municipal environment. So we've had to work through the issues of the stakeholders, and we believe that a new law that would set up a new arrangement and a new regime would be a better place to be and would enable a fair ground for participation. So if the committee is asking how can they help, enabling legislation would be what we would say, appropriately guided by the executive. The municipalities that haven't signed, we are sitting at 147 out of 187, so it's about 40 municipalities that haven't signed. The number will not quite get to 187 because others participated without signing the accession agreement for legal issues. There was potential litigation against them. But we have found that we are signing accession agreements every day, so it's just possibly a processing issue and not so much people saying they do not want to participate. We haven't had anyone saying they do not want to participate. In fact, over the years, in the last 2 years, for instance, one has observed that municipalities that had initially said, oh no, we're not interested in this process, I now in fact signing these accession agreements. One of the most recent that we signed is Stellenbosch Municipality, which initially was reluctant. So we are able, as we are working on the ground with the various parties, to persuade people, and we believe that this is a number that will become very relevant quite soon, because people have signed. And perhaps the negotiations are the ones that will show us effect and the commitment of people, which will take me to the next question. These deal breakers, can they keep us negotiating forever? The plan through Chairperson is that we will set out a negotiating environment that would have a dispute resolution mechanism, and they would have a final say over issues. So one would have different levels at which the negotiation happens. But at the moment, our idea is that perhaps the Interministerial Committee on EDI plus SAUGA would have to serve as that final arbiter in relation to these negotiations. So parties would be given scope to negotiate, but they would know that there's a body that will finally make a call. So they don't have forever to negotiate. So hopefully in the way we structure the actual negotiations, we are able to disincentivize people to want to talk forever. We have developed potential solutions and preliminary solutions as indicated even to these deal breakers. And there are some conversations that will have to happen amongst leaders in this country to resolve how these things are dealt with. If I use the example of dividends, if municipalities are to get compensated for their assets, get surcharge and get a dividend, which they are not getting at the moment, this money has to come somewhere. You will derive something from efficiencies, but at some point the efficiencies will run out. Where then do you look? Do you look at tariffs? Our advice would be no, don't go towards tariffs. Let's talk to the parties to be reasonable around what they are demanding out of this process so that overall we are able to balance the interests of the country and achieve certain objectives. And that type of resolution of issues then one would then throw to this type of committee and have finality on those issues. So that's how we plan for the negotiations to go. Secondly, all of these issues, we're looking to a way of codifying them somehow. And we look at the full range of codification instruments, so from the lowest being contracts to regulations to the Act. So the Red Establishment Legislation will by and large regulate some of these issues that we identify as being issues, particularly within the regulations context because they're slightly more flexible than the actual Act. But we are looking to codify these conversations and these negotiations. The question around accounts receivable, Member Flau, as you indicate, currently there are different capabilities out on the ground. We, however, do know that there are good centers of excellence where municipalities and ESCOM are doing very well in collection. And our sense would be that we'd endeavor to make sure that those good instances are replicated elsewhere. There are communities in this country that are paying up to 97%, 98%, and 99%. Tembisa and Egrulen is one of those. Stiftshwete and Mpumalanga is one of those. So, Tamin as well has good collection levels. So, there are good practices out there. The biggest problem seems to be that there's no sharing around the country. What is it that you are doing to do it differently and get better results than some people? So, our sense would be that take the best instances, share them across, make them standard operating procedures, and improve on a daily basis. But community consultation and involvement for us seems to make a big difference in the performance of the collection. So our sense is that if you had an entity that knew that if it did not collect, it would still to exist. It would focus on it in an appropriate way. It would be able to disaggregate and segment the communities they're dealing with, and in fact, be better able to identify those communities that really cannot pay, as opposed to those who are riding the bandwagon, who can pay, who pay other things, but just, you know, will ride government for as long as it takes for government to come back and demand its share. So our sense would be that doing those things and a combination of those things would put us in a better stead as the future distribution industry to collect the money due. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think we've come a long way with the wage issue. And in any case, my concern still remains municipalities. Because I think the municipalities, some of them, have not behaved very well in the past. And there has not been any savings for the consumer. So if we continue going in the same direction, will it be cost effective? Because the main thing that the politicians are looking at is if you can report back to your constituency and say, well, there's going to be a saving if we do X, Y, Z. But if you can go there and say, well, we don't know, it's just another thing, and the entitlement of a dividend to the municipality will make sure that they get the maximum, because there was a return, an additional return. It's a bit unfair it's unfair on one hand. On the other hand, the municipality is looking at it as a form of revenue. But for the consumer, you think, hey, let's cut this off. If we cut this off, it will immediately bring down our cost for banks, for the facility. And then the other issue is that when they said that we are getting the cheapest electricity, I always shudder, because I don't think it is fair for that, because we do the coal, and coal is our product. Mm. We should make sure that we get it at the best price. And then all of a sudden we compare ourselves to the first world. It's not really fair. So I don't see it. But what is encouraging, what the chairperson has said, is other forms of electricity. I think it is very important that this be introduced and encouraged, because it may, the competition is always good for everyone. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's just a follow-up on the Honourable Member's question on the time frame. I've read everything and I still don't know where we're going. It seems like it's exactly the same way we've gone. What we've learned, it seems like from 2003, is that the legislation is not right. Now, I've seen that on the 13th it's been tabled in Parliament, if I'm correct. So I'm sure with the hope, with the assistance of the majority party, this will go through Parliament very quickly. And I want to know, let's say it's through Parliament, and we've got the legislation. Yes, I'll ask you. So, let's say it's through Parliament. How long is it going to take till we see the first rate? And how long do they aim to see the last rate? Can we say that after the World Cup next year we've got our first rate? Going, is it a year? Is it a 5-year project? Is it a 10-year? Or is it like the Honourable Member next to me say it's still negotiation? There must be a time frame. Just give us an idea. If there's problems, then get them out of the way.
There's two things that I want to raise. The first is just an interesting aside. There was talk of 187 agreements. Are those all different, or is it like one basic agreement that's amended to specific municipality that you're dealing with? And if so, what's the variation in scope and the nature of those agreements? The second thing is a more substantive issue. I'm feeling sorry for you. Apart from all the other things that have slowed down the rest, and I'm in favor of this, what I'm saying is not a negative thing against EDI, it's more of a political issue. Because I get the sense that the real issue is a lack of political will at national level to address the entire energy problem, including the EDI thing. Now, I know it's an uncomfortable issue for you, because although you may not be politicians anymore, sometimes. You work for politicians. You work and you report to politicians. And I think it is the duty of this committee, and there's not an attack on any party, for us as a committee, to say what can be done to ensure that we have a proper debate about getting the politics right to ensure the implementation of the strategy. I don't think it's an issue that the ANC or COPE would be able to differ fundamentally on. How do we create the conditions? And maybe you can make some comments on what you think needs to be done.
without getting fired.
Those are the three. Just on the legislation part of it, understand it's going to be the Justice and Constitutional Committee that will be the amendment, not us. So it means we must have a way of how we work in that committee so that we can have a better relationship, I'm sure, with them, because what they're going to amend will affect it. But I think the constitutional amendment is one of the discussions that was going on. I'm not looking for media. But I understand that it was one of the occasions where you couldn't implement the rate without the constitutional amendment, because then it means then the municipalities will take it to court. I'm sure that in terms of the constitution, that right is with them, not with the national government who's trying to organize the rate. For a better, I think I fully agree with those members. It's long overdue. We're supposed to fast track the process. By now that you have it. It should be before 2010. It can't be after 2010, because we need that as soon as possible. So I think as part of our oversight work is for us to engage with the politicians and the implementing process. That's our job. The political will then from Mr. Chester, I'm not sure of that one. But as far as I know, this government is willing. Who then is dragging his or her feet, I'm not sure. Maybe they can answer from the department, because it's not COVID again. And surely the transition from the elections up to now, I'm sure it does have a bearing. But it's not the end of June. We want to see the race operational. Very, I mean, we are supposed to see that. So I'm sure they want to tell us, you can't just keep quiet on this one. It's not only the media, you must come in from the department.
And I think maybe the principle of one government, three spheres, is actually an important one to bring back, because obviously I think we would say in lot of things that government should do in the three spheres, there might be still a lot of work of saying what do we place where to ensure effective and efficient management and implementation. That's still an issue. So I think the constitutional amendment may be talking to a point where an issue as important and serious as energy can't be left without any responsibility of other spheres to say, not my problem, local government problem. With the outages, I'm sure any leadership, whichever party or any sphere of government, you can't afford to take that kind of stance. So I think one would like to raise a point of saying, it looks like we are saying the other spheres of government, national particularly, do have a responsibility in dealing with this matter. That will then qualify a point of suggesting the constitutional amendment. The actual bill of saying what are the details in terms of this restructuring then becomes the other point in terms of what legislation guides and assists us to manage that process. The leadership of the EDI in terms of its board have a 3-year term of office. And I think, Chair, as you have said, that you would wish that it should be before 2010, which means you give us a 6 months. No, it's less than 6 months, because it's the 8th month to 12th, so which means there should be sense of what can happen at about what time. So I think the issue of the constitutional amendment, the portfolio or department that is dealing with that, with this particular portfolio committee, can actually assist in terms of internal processes, because there are things which were quite important. You know, at one point, at the exposure at local government, decision-making process takes the largest part of getting things done. at 1.1 trying to inquire, to check, if you see an open piece of land and there are no disagreement that there should be development, going through the entire decision-making process and getting the foundation laid on the ground, how long does it take? We wouldn't be able to get to a period of less than 18 months. It's going to be, if everything goes okay, it's 18 months. So we're trying to look at a point on how you shorten the process in terms of decision-making. So I won't actually bore the meeting in terms of what happens, but I will tell you with the interrelationship and responsibilities that are divided across spheres of government, seeing a piece of land in a local area, agreeing as an authority in that area that a particular development should take place, for the entire decision-making process, it's not less than 18 months. So I would say in the context of what the question is, we would actually agree, Chairperson, that we are in full support with the concern raised by the committee of speeding up the process, and we fully support that. And on our part, we'll do the best we can to ensure at the, you know, most convenient, shortest period of time, the implementation of the rest do take place. But we will actually be able to share information as well where there might be challenges, Chair. So I think maybe one would like to just say those are major issues, but maybe we'll allow the comments from the CEO and the department.
Thank you, Chair. Just to then deal specifically with the question around the 187 agreement, it is an MOU, so it is a standard. It's one agreement. It's one document, and it's an agreement that says we as current distributors agree that the restructuring must happen, and we will participate and cooperate and take steps necessary to reinforce. So it's really a rallying point for people to start conversing about the restructuring and then moving accordingly. And it was initially signed by the key parties at the national level, SAUGA, NERSA, ESCOM, and the department. And now we're getting municipalities as well to tie themselves into that. So it is a single agreement. So this, in fact, is a very short agreement. It's an agreement to agree, it's an agreement to cooperate. Where the differences would come in agreements is the actual negotiations. When we're talking now to asset transfer and business transfer, that's where you possibly would find some differences in the agreement. And that issue management matrix I was talking to would then assist us to standardize as much as possible, but also leave enough space for local conditions and peculiarities to be taken account of. And definitely, Chair, one couldn't agree more that strong political leadership as well around this issue would assist in ensuring a situation. And one can say that one is beginning to see that. And we've come along. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, members. I need to be careful as well in answering the political will question. But all indications are that there is political will, in the sense that from our side of the department, we have received the backing of the executive in that the constitutional amendment was approved by cabinet. And we then proceeded to prepare the red establishment legislation, assuming that the constitutional amendment will be passed by Parliament. So there is another piece of legislation which will come before the committee once the constitutional amendment has been passed. And we've completed the process of drafting that. We don't know whether our assumptions were correct, but we also were, you know, driven by the fact that you know, the country has waited too long for this process, and that we don't want to delay it any further once that constitutional amendment is in place. The one request that I think at this stage, knowing what we know about the energy sector as a whole, we would want some leeway from the committee, if that were possible, to delay you know, actual implementation or introduction of new activities before 2010. Because as it is currently, we believe that the system is stretched to the limit, you know, to make sure that we can at least get through the World Cup. I think all the legislative, you know, work needs to be done up front, but the actual, you know, I guess nuts and bolts issues perhaps may need to be, you know, deferred a little bit so that we can minimize the possibility of this process leading to some disruption or being used then to you know, as a scapegoat should anything go wrong during the World Cup. So that is, I think, a request that we want to make. I think the 18 months that the chair of EDI has alluded to, we would think that it is, you know, it is a most prudent approach. Again, assuming that the constitutional, you know, amendment is passed.
Mr. Baker, please yield that to you.
I don't understand. Maybe you need to say it very slowly. I believe the rates are going to assist in terms of the energy efficiency and the shortage of energy, or just to try and make sure that we integrate what we do and coordinate better. In that way, what will be the disruption, I mean, for? What will cost those facilities to fail and delay until after 2010? I'm not an energy engineer. I'm sorry. I don't understand changes what, but it is not clear to me why we should do that.
All right. I think what we are looking at from where we sit is the capacity, because the same people that have got to negotiate you know, with others on the RES establishment process are the same people that have got to make sure that, you know, for the World Cup, everything goes smoothly. So sometimes splitting their, you know, attention and focus may disrupt other processes. It's just the whole issue of the skills in the sector. You know, all the agreements can be done because those perhaps don't involve all the technical people. I think the concern here is the engineer, that you wouldn't want all, you know, their focus to be split right now, because as it is right now, we are stretched to the limit in as far as the capacity of the whole energy space.
I think to me, I'm not convinced with that. I'm totally not convinced. There should be some other means that they do. I agree. We are a country that is short of gas skills, and we're not the only one internationally, but moreover, as a developing country for the moment. But still, I mean, with that, it can't be the only sole reason that they have to delay this because we don't have enough engineers. Then, if you give them another job, then they'll be. So in their focus on this, really, it's not a convincing answer, I must say. To me, I'm not sure to committee members.
I think
we're
afraid of
chemicals. Pardon? We're afraid of chemicals. Okay. No, that's not a really convincing answer. Chairperson?
No, Chair, the suggestion which I'd like to make is to say it may be very helpful because, as I said, the engagement of the EDI holding and the department in terms of what we have presented is ongoing. I would suggest that maybe the committee can invite the department in terms of, you know, how they see the process rolling out. because I think the issues that we're looking at in terms of what are options, what are suggestions of taking this debate out to stakeholders and ensuring that we have a shorter timeline for implementation. Because I wouldn't like to say there's so many months. All I'm just saying that we are here for 3 years. I finished a few months of my 3 years from December last year, and I wouldn't like to stay here forever. The sooner I get out, the job is done. So I think that's the attitude change, as I'm saying that the approach from the board as well is to say this is the best way possible in terms of taking the process forward, linked to what we're presenting and the details that we have explained, and we hope that we can get support from you and from the department, get that process managed. If the executive cabinet needs to actually endorse or support certain things, it's fine. But all we're saying, let's look at a shorter time of implementation. The process of implementation, the actual program of implementation, I'm sure the department can be able to prepare and input and engage the committee. And let's actually work towards shortening at that time, because I'm sure lots of discussions, preparation have taken place, and I'm sure we can say, without being at a point where we say everything will be perfect, go out and get things done. I would support that future. But in terms of savings, Chair, I wanted just to make a small comment that there is actually a project that's very important linked to the entire process. You have mentioned it, Chair, is a point of energy efficiency. So I think also closer to municipalities, there are issues which are quite important around urban management and governance. At the quality that hits communities in terms of the service we provide, particularly electricity, there are huge issues. I'm sure in the recent past you might have read the issues around cable theft, the issues closer to communities around illegal connections, which actually affect the quality of service. Because if you talk, even the community of Tembisa, around 2002, it was the worst area where there was huge illegal connections and there was really substandard quality of electricity supply. We couldn't even account for electricity being given to a resident in terms of how much we should actually receive from them, or we had no guarantee of those individuals or those households using that electricity paying us back. So I think those are points to a point where we went from protective structures, some prepaid arrangement, to a point that now we know for each household how much they use and actually how much they should pay us. And in fact, we have worked in a situation that they are able to pay for what they use with very less losses around inefficiencies, like safety around the quality of supply to residents. So I'm saying we do actually find that there may be a number of issues that will actually work back to savings. Because I would say maybe to the honourable member that savings in that community, people are paying less than what they used to pay because they're using electricity better. It does link to energy efficiency to a large extent. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. Honourable Chair,
my view was to say we should not say end, but will come later. But also because my view and my understanding is to say the rest will be also using the utility and then the if that's the case, we won't be having any problem. So we can't just claim to say I believe also there is a plan in terms of filters and not polymers. Because that's what you should be able to do so that you can be able to say and the efficiency of office. Maybe what needs to happen is that the EDI and the department must be able to find commonality before the end of this month. And so that this committee can get a very specific one before 2010 this project is started. That you know, when the president said this president acting in parliament, it wanted us to have things implemented as, we can't have, I think I remember they just said that this thing has been a long time being delayed, from 1991. Well, our students too. I don't know. But then, now I'm here in Paname, can't have any my friends. He can't allow it. I mean, besides that, yourself, you can't allow it.
Yeah.
Unless yourself, you want to leave a bad legacy. That, you know, the next generation that will come will say, hey, these people are saying that. In fact, you implemented the resolution that was taken in 1991.
Oh,
yeah. Hey.
No, as far as I think I agree with the agency, but I think NEPA should also learn that the wheels of government move very slowly. And at times it hits a break. That's part of democracy. At times you don't have to jump out of things. You don't go to constitutional court. Why have you done this and that? You find that, but that's not an excuse. To me, as far as I can wrap up this simple and just that EDI has done what they were mandated to do. I think now the goal is with the department to implement what is there from the EDI. EDI, to me, has done a very good job given to them. They have done all whatever, and they even went a step further, I mean, to discuss municipalities and certain others. So really, now, the department is to and come to us. I think that the invitation is welcome, that they should, you must tell them to come here and talk to us and give us better answers. Not the one that the DDG was giving us. That's what I don't think it's not on. We are not accepting that. We want to get a better answer. And surely this legislation needs to be fulfilled. And you must make sure that you can then implement. So this is a 2006 cabinet decision. I don't know when they're going to do again, cabinet, but I think we have to engage you as the Department of Energy. You come and tell us where the processes are. Now we've got the version from EDI. You must try and restructure our program now so that you can then deal with the department straight. And fortunately, we've got NERSA next Tuesday and the ESCOM.
I'm waiting for the department.
That's okay. I think our way forward, I think from here, we will invite the department soon. We'll try and see how we reschedule our programs and make sure that before we go on the set, at least we can have the audience with the department so that they can come and tell us exactly what it is. Linked to that will be the question of the LPG and the guest store. DDG, you were not there at the workshop. We gave them 1 month from that time, so a month is about two. Before the 12th, we need to get an answer from the department. The regulation in terms of the guest in the happen. Cannot be that from 2007-2006, they were also mandated to do the same. It seems this department is famous on delay. But I don't understand that one. Why is delaying them to formulate the regulation on gas? Everyone is changing his or their own price. It depends if you can share it with them. And then for the same thing, 5 kg of gas will pay 4 different or 5 different prices. Not right. So, yeah. So, we want them to get those. So, we'll try and rearrange the problem in order to have to call you then before the end of this process. We want those answers. We want them as soon as it's
next.
All right. So, EDI, I'm not sure because you left away, but you've done your part as far as I can. You've done your part, but you're tired of it. I think you are also doing a nice and good job. So So to me, they work hand in hand. It's not only the grocery thing, but they're also doing work. You are working hard. So we are very proud of your work. But we say keep on the good work. We will then engage the department. If the other department is still, I can call the department and yourself together on in one meeting. Because we don't want them to say, no, that is not what. I'm sure that it's better to get the department and EDI at the same meeting so we trust our decision.
No, the only thing to say is thank you. We were happy that you think we're presenting ourselves professionally and not in a shady but fancy way. And which means for members as well, we're using our money well. So I think that's basically the point. Thanks very much.
Well, thank you very much, sir.
Okay.